Blog Talk Radio.
Be critical, Mother, come to me. Make my way sacred, fill me with beauty.
Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. It's here where we discuss goddess as deity, archetype, and ideal, the feminine consciousness, right brain thinking, and how women of the West are being called upon to save the world. Yep, that's what we talk about, all those things right here. And again, I have to give a shout out to Lisa Thiel. It's her music you've been listening to for weeks at the top of the show. And if you want to hear more about Lisa's songs or find out how to buy her music, or I think you can actually download some stuff, go to sacreddream.com. That's sacreddream.com. Now, tonight, you probably know if you're tuning in, and our guest is Roberta Cantow. She's the filmmaker of the wonderful and important trilogy, Blood Time, Moon Time, and Dream Time. I reviewed her film, and let me read you what I wrote, because I believe it really sort of encapsulates what we're going to talk about tonight after my What's the Buzz segment. So here's the short review I wrote for her after I watched her trilogy, because it was so moving for me. Okay, watching Roberta Cantow's film trilogy was so satisfying and filled me with such bittersweet joy. As a woman whose mother referred to my sacred blood as being sick, believe me, I related. I cried watching this film. I shouted in agreement. It gave me hope. I believe this trilogy is must viewing for women and men everywhere. I particularly love the inclusion of men, fathers and sons, in this film. This is part of the goddess story. This is part of women reconnecting with the divine feminine, their blood, their womb. This is a rejection of pharmaceutical companies and patriarchy that teaches women to be at odds with and despise their natural cycles. It's about women throwing off the disempowering shackles imposed upon them in a male-dominated culture. This is about women having a positive image of themselves, their cycles, and their bodies. And this is for men, too, so they might understand the sacredness and begin once again to honor women and the wisdom of their bodies. Well, that was my review, and I meant every word of it and still do. So please stay tuned in and hear from Roberta as we talk about this important topic. Important because women are being called on to step up, to save the world, as the Dalai Lama says. And knowing this information is a piece of that tapestry women have to reweave themselves, their history, their lives, their bodies, the within and the without. So, stay with us, please. And just so you'll know, here are the topics for my What's the Buzz segment later after Roberta and I chat. That's when I share with you those bees buzzing around in my bonnet, just dying to get out all week. And there's always a lot to discuss. It's hard most of the time to decide what to talk about. Things are moving so very quickly. There's an escalation happening out there. I don't know if you feel it, but it seems that way to me. So many ideals of goddess being violated out there, so much history and truth being rewritten, and seeming pride being taken, and anti-intellectualism, and what I call the dumbing down of our fellow Americans. You know, a Republican teabagger in the news running for office to represent Puerto Rico didn't even know Puerto Rico was a territory of the United States and not a country in and of itself. It's sad, really sad. And exploitation, inequality, oppression, intolerance, racism, sexism, all those isms, unfortunately, are alive and well, and we have to keep pushing back. I know most of you listen from the archives, but I still want to remind you that you can call in and talk to Roberta and I, or you can call in and comment during the What's the Buzz segment. That number is 718-766-4662. That's 718-766-4662. And what I'll do is if I see your number come up on the switchboard, I will wait till we get to a good stopping point before I interrupt our guest, because we might be right in the middle of something really juicy and interesting. And when we finish that, that thought, then I will come to you if I see your phone number pop up on my screen. So at the bottom of the hour, after my interview with Roberta, I'm going to offer a brief commentary on the state of it all. Then we'll discuss these following couple topics. Number one, I don't know if you know about it, but West Virginia Baptist pastor Jeff Owens is inciting a Hunt a Homo campaign. Yes. Hunt a Homo campaign. I'll give you his address so you can write him and tell him what you think. No wonder Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine, our forefathers, were so adamant about the separation of church and state and commented on how dangerous religion can really be. Second thing we're going to talk about is in Saudi Arabia, women are resisting the virtue police. Yep. And third topic is going to be about Italy having its first woman priest. And we're going to round out our What's the Buzz by talking about the Christian conservatives that are getting away with rewriting the history books in Texas, which can have ramifications beyond Texas. And guess what? They don't want people like Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson in the history books. Well, I wonder why. Maybe it's because of what I just said. They were so adamant about the importance of separation of church and state. Well, stay with me and hear why one of the journalists that I know whose article I'm going to be quoting tonight says the American Taliban must be stopped. So please keep our number handy, 718-766-4662. Then I'll close out the evening with some comments and feedback from some of you with announcements of wonderful events happening around Southern California and afar. So stay tuned after our guest tonight and through What's the Buzz so you're sure to be in the loop in case there's something exciting happening near you. And again, thanks to those of you who have sent in questions, comments, and articles that I am only too happy to share. And for your wonderful feedback, you know it's gas in my tank, keeps me going. And hearing someone say the show is their lifeline or even that they just enjoy it, it means the world to me. It makes all the difference. But without further delay, let me turn my attention to this week's guest, Roberta Cantow. And she's going to tell me if I'm pronouncing that right because I forgot to ask her if it's Cantow or Canto. So let me tell you about this incredibly accomplished woman. And I'm going to read her narrative bio. She says, throughout my life, I have combined my background as an independent film and video maker with my teaching skills. I've served as an educator to a wide variety of multi-ethnic populations in community college, adult education, youth-oriented museum, and artist-in-residence programs teaching English as a second language, basic writing, drama, art, filmmaking, and digital storytelling. In 2003, my exposure to storytelling as new media led me to serve the values-oriented storytelling needs of organizations, with a particular interest in those which emphasize paradigm shifts, community service, and return to wholeness. Many of my films have been supported with grants for production and distribution from public funding agencies such as the National Endowment for the Arts, New York State's Council on the Arts, and others. And if I'm reading her bio right, and she can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the trilogy we're talking about tonight, Blood Time, Moon Time, Dream Time, has won some awards. An award of excellence from the Accolade Competition in 2008. It was a finalist in the Moondance International Film Festival. It was an official selection in the Conscious Life Film Festival, another official selection in another film festival called Brilliant Light. Her bio goes on and on. Roberta is, not just an educator and a film and video maker and videographer and digital storyteller. I think she is a modern-day bard, and I so appreciate that. So, Roberta, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen. That's quite an intro.
Well, I'm just shining some light on everything you've done, so can't hide that light under a bushel. So is it Cantow or Canto? Please tell me the correct pronunciation.
You know, there was a family argument on that subject, so
that
I don't know that it was
better.
Ever fully it was never fully resolved, but I generally refer to myself as Roberta Canto.
Okay, Roberta Canto. Well, you know, if the family can't even decide, I'm not going to beat myself up for
yeah, right.
being able
you don't
to figure
need
it out. So, Roberta, you've obviously done a lot of stuff, and at some point I'm going to have to, take the time to look at some of your other work. But this trilogy you made, you know, as I said in the review, it really moved me. I can't tell people enough how good I think it is. And I guess I'm just wondering, how did it come about? What inspired you? And, so let's just start at the beginning.
Okay. I didn't know in the beginning that I was making a trilogy. That came about when it started to get a little bit complex and I found out that there were certain things that I had gone off to shoot that didn't really fit with other things I had shot. And so it was a very long process to come up with what ended up to be these three segments. But I did start with some initial ideas, and I think that for the most part, the ideas I started with represent the first two parts, Blood Time and Moon Time. I was involved in a journal writing group at that time that had women in it with daughters who were coming of age, and it was the first time I was introduced to the idea of a celebration for girls at the time of their first periods. It just was a brand new idea for me, and I was curious about it, and one thing led to another, and I started hearing references to this notion of the blood mysteries, and it just was appealing to me, and I wanted to explore it. So that was the genesis, really.
I see. And I think you told me at some point that it was during that journal writing you were introduced to what we call goddess ideals, shared leadership, group consensus, things like that.
Very much so. I don't think I really, when I was in the journal writing group, I was experiencing journal writing with a group of women who were very supportive of each other, and, they were very comforting evenings. You could read or not after, a certain little session of writing. And but it was an opportunity for people to go around the room and read from their entries of that evening. And it really created a certain atmosphere that was very supportive. There was no, we didn't criticize each other's writing. We didn't comment on each other's writing. It was much more experiential. And in a way, it was much more subtle. The overall experience was more subtle than I realized. So having come from New York, New York City, where, there's a lot of competition and it's all about being the best. And when people did writing, it was to get feedback and criticism. This was just a really profoundly different experience.
Sounds like it was more nurturing, maybe.
It had it certainly was nurturing. It had there was a supportive quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't know, what wasn't overtly stated, was the degree to which the group really was trying to establish a very different way of coming together and relating and being in group. And, there were sacred elements to the evening that certainly at the end involved a little ritual of some sort and kind of sealing the sacredness of the experience. So, you know, there was a, it's funny, I want to say it was very subtle and soft in a certain sense, but also very profound in the step that it represented, stepping out of, a mold that I had known previously.
Well, and the mold you'd known previously in New York is much more patriarchal, much more, we would call it, you know, more masculine. And this other thing that you have described is much more the essence of the sacred feminine. So I find that really interesting myself, too, that, you know, that you have that dichotomy, you know, you recognize that dichotomy. So in this journal class, this is where you met these women who turned you on to the idea of the blood mysteries. How long did it actually take you to go from novice, first hearing about the blood mysteries, to actually, I mean, as a filmmaker, you're almost putting yourself in the role of expert. I mean, what was that journey like? And did you have, how did you learn about all of this?
Well, that is really a good question. I have to tell you, I feel that I still am learning about it. I am amazed at the way in which, having made the film, you know, the whole process of making it and the experience of nurturing it into the world and discovering how it's being received in the world, the whole process has been an ongoing learning experience. And the truth is that some of the things you just said, which I now understand, were not part of my understanding when I started the film. It's been an evolving process of understanding not only what I was doing, but what I was looking into.
Well, I'd say you were probably divinely guided. Because you did an excellent job, and you know what, Roberta, we're all still trying to figure it out. You know, we are all on the journey. You know, because as we're trying to reclaim and rethink and reconstruct this women's spirituality, this goddess spirituality, it's not like, you know, we have our mothers and grandmothers necessarily to tell us how to do it. You know, we are following our divine inspiration too. So. And I really do think, you know, that cliche, it's the journey, it's not the destination. I think we all have to just, sort of accept that we're gonna just keep learning to the day our eyes close for good.
Well, you know, there's certain things that fall under the rubric of the feminine that are also, you know, the part of the agenda of certain political factions, you know, the environment being an example. It's certainly not only women who are interested and concerned about the environment. That's just the one example I can think of right now. But certainly there's a way in which attention to the earth and caring for the earth dovetails directly with the movement that we're talking about.
Of course.
And, I think that I've been really stunned in a way to discover that in other situations, people whose politics I would have thought coincided with mine did not necessarily embrace or understand the film.
Okay.
And that was kind of a surprise in a way. Because underlying, it's not, although it's not overtly stated, there are so many underlying ideas that I would have thought they would get.
Well, I haven't seen the trilogy in a while now, so it's not real, real fresh in my mind. But I think one of the probably subtle statements you make is, you know, when we see that blood, you know, how the blood is, you know, how we associate it with war. I don't know, I sort of, you know, now that you're saying that, I wonder if you consciously sort of had an anti-war idea going on in your mind at the time? Or explain that idea of the blood, you know, how we look at the blood in, I'm struggling for the words here. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, it's the piece called Blood Time. That's exactly what it's looking at. It's looking at all the different situations in which we are either willing or unwilling to look at blood, or to acknowledge it, or you know, or that we have different reactions to it. So, I mean, blood flows through our bodies. It's part of the. It's part of what makes us be alive. Is that we have this blood flowing through our bodies, and yet there are, you know, countless misuses in the form of whether it's war or violence or whatever, and, you know, the spilling of blood, and that sets off a whole chain reaction. But we, nonetheless, we engage in war. We engage in violence. So, you know, this is part of what, although we may say we're opposed to it, we as a country or a culture engage in it.
And well, and wasn't there something... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
Well, wasn't there also something about you were sort of making a statement that we really honor the blood of war a bit too much rather than revering, like, say, for instance, the woman's sacred blood? It's almost like the blood of war is something we wear as a badge of honor or something. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, you are. You are. You are, and I just really was trying to bring to the fore this dichotomy of these different reactions to and the different ways that we relate to blood, depending on, you know, blood in what context. There are people who run off to see all kinds of, you know, blood-filled, gore-filled movies, you know, with gratuitous violence and never think twice about it as disgusting, but those same people would have that to say about the monthly bleeding of women.
Right.
So I was just really trying to bring those, just bring that topic up and to the fore for consideration.
Well, and that really did make me think, I have to tell you. I mean, even though I was already tuned in to this idea of, you know, revering sacred blood because that is part of goddess spirituality, I hadn't really thought about how Americans, especially, you know, part of, you know, where, you know, waving that American flag, it almost goes hand in hand with sort of accepting the blood of war, the blood of death. I don't know. It made me, you know what? I don't know. It made me think about things a little bit differently. It really did.
It's interesting to how much there's a general notion that, you know, war is awful but necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so on some level there's an acceptance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there is not on some level. I mean, obviously, we continue to engage in wars, so there is an overt acceptance of it. And yet, all the different ways that women experience blood are still, you know, either hidden or shamed.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know about you, I know so many women with fibroids, and usually with fibroids comes this intense bleeding sometimes, you know, if they, you know, don't have it under control or they have a flare-up. And I can't think of anything that is more humbling or makes you feel more vulnerable than just having this, you know, this flow of blood coming out of your body that, you know, you can't stop, you know. You know, it's just, you know, the power of it. You know, you really get the sense of life and death. I mean, I think if you ever experience that, or anybody who's hemorrhaged or something like that, you really do have a different relationship with the blood. It's not like cutting your finger or some people who never come face to face with blood.
Right.
anyway, I'm sorry. I'm sort of, you know, going off on a tangent here,
but that's okay.
So let me ask
just
you.
Just for the audience, though, to understand where I'm coming from, I mean, it's really that ultimately, although there are themes about blood that weave throughout the trilogy, it's mostly in the context of the idea that of blood as the river of the river that runs through life. You know,
right. Yeah, because we don't want to
go ahead.
Well, we don't want to give listeners the wrong idea about the trilogy. You know, this isn't a blood and gore fest. This is beautiful. I mean, this is beautiful and artfully done. And we're going to talk about the art of it, before you go, too. So I'm glad you made that point because I think I was going, you know, I'm going down this Red River Valley here, and that's not what the film looks like at all. So please, listeners, don't think you know, the whole film is in a shade of red. It's not.
Well, you know, I think maybe it would be good to say something about some of the participants because, for example, in the Blood Time first film, the two voices that you hear are the voice of a man who worked as a clinical psychologist in the VA administration and relates his experiences of wounded warriors and what they had to say and how much they returned with this sense of having blood on their hands. And that's contrasted with a woman who's the director of the Expressive Arts Institute in San Diego who talks about the alternative voice, really, of this unrecognized, you know, the blood of women and how it's unrecognized and devalued and misunderstood. And you know, how it represents the feminine as opposed to the masculine of the blood of war. So that point is made in the beginning.
Well, did you want to tell us about some of the other characters? I mean, I can remember the woman with the goddess dolls and that beautiful ritual that they put on for the woman who was about to have her baby. You want to talk about any of those? Any of them stand out for you?
I'll just say quickly that Moontime is mostly a discussion about the value and importance of celebrating a girl's first period as a way to bring her into womanhood and develop more self-esteem around the whole notion of this process that she's going to be involved in for so much of the rest of her life. It's Laura Owen who wrote the book Her Blood is Gold, who I feature in that part as the I'll call it the authoritative voice. She's very learned and has a lot to say. And then there are also women or young girls and their fathers who talk in different ways about this time of life. So that's Moontime. And then Dreamtime is much more varied. I have a lot of examples of people creating ritual and doing art as a way to move through or transition through different stages of their lives, all representing, you know, that later stages of their life, after menarche, all the other things that come about. So there's an example of a ritual, really, to encourage and assist a woman to have a healthy birth. We don't see the birth. It's not about that. It's about a ritual that takes place in advance of the birth to celebrate the woman and encourage her comfort and safe arrival of the baby.
Well, you know, I remember watching that in particular and thinking to myself how much more beautiful this ritual they were doing for this woman. It was, I mean, it just sort of had this essence of nurturing and caring as opposed to these silly showers that we give, you know, women about to have a baby, you know, and play these silly games. And not that that's not, you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't be fun and lighthearted, but if those showers were, you could take them to another level and do like they did in that film, for example, you know, or build on those ideas in the film, you know, it you know, it takes it out of the, I think, the realm of the shallow and puts it more into the realm of the sacred. Because after all, you know, we forget to honor women as life giver. It's something that we sort of just take for granted, I think, and we don't think much about it. But I think it causes us to refocus, and it's an important refocusing. I think we have to do.
And I think you said that very well. The third part as a whole, which is the part that's called Dreamtime, has this variety of representations of people using, whether it's art or ritual, to move through these transitions. So you had mentioned the woman who makes the dolls, and she gives very specific example of how she'd begun with this very small, way less than life-size doll that she used to heal herself from a traumatic experience, and then how, as time went by, because that was so powerful, such a powerful experience for her, she moved into creating more and more dolls that were more and more life-size, that displayed, as she researched and studied all about the goddesses and whatnot, displayed more and more of the various attributes of the goddess. So they end up being these incredibly powerful statements and creations. And she speaks to how they, in the making of them, they have been used to transform her. And there's absolutely no doubt that people who see them are themselves just completely transported by that. The beauty of them and what they suggest.
Well, you know, the whole trilogy, you know, as I said before, I thought it really was done so well. But I think on some level, you know, maybe one of the most important things that ranks up there with so many important things it touched on was the fact that at least I took it the way it came across in the trilogy for me was the importance of heaven's sons and fathers a part of this process. And I thought how lucky a girl would be to grow up in that kind of a family, to have instead of it being something that, you know, has to be hush-hush and taboo and secret, you know, that it just be, you know, having a girl's brothers, you know, honor her during that time, or I don't know, you know, I just think it's so important to really think about that, because it's not really just for the women. I think this really should be something for the boys and the fathers too, because, you know, I hear women all the time, you know, say, oh, men just don't get it. Well, you know what? We have to teach them, and then they will get it, and, you know, they will start to, I think, embrace what we see as important, what we see as sacred. We can't expect them to just get it through osmosis or something, you know. So I thought that was an important point.
Well, thank you. I know that what you just said is absolutely true. I think that I guess it evokes in me a thought about the variety of response that I've gotten to the film and the way in which it seems to imply that there are, there are women who've been very responsive to the film, but also women who have not. And I think that it speaks to how entrenched notions of patriarchy are, that there's a way in which we're just steeped in the culture of patriarchy to the point where we don't even know it. We don't even know the ways in which, in other words, so I'm trying to say something about the way in which my experience of audiences is that those who understand the feminine and have feelings about it are that much more able to get the message of the film.
Was it shocking for you to maybe come across the women who didn't get it? I mean, what was that like? Can you elaborate a little bit?
All I mean to say is that there, this, you know, no matter what you put out into the world, there's going to be different levels of comfort that people have with what they see. So I did experience a variety in the levels of comfort in depending on the audience, where the audience came from, you know, even what city I was in, whether the inclination was to be, you know, ultra critical and discerning and judgmental and kind of compartmentalize, you know, this is, that was one side of the experience. And then the other side of the experience was people who were, you know, just open and receptive. Even if they weren't familiar with the ideas of the film, they were able to let the film come in.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of an enlightening experience for me, because I hadn't been aware of all these different levels of resistance, and it has a lot to do with how people, you know, whether people think of themselves as intellectual or not. That would determine the level of acceptance. Whether they thought of themselves as political or not, that would also determine their level of acceptance or understanding. But I know all the time that I was making the film that the ideas in the film were becoming more and more available to people in the culture in general. And I do believe, as your intro stated, you know, that there is a movement afoot and that things are changing. And actually, this is a good intro for me to say something about one of the images in the film.
Okay.
Which is, you know, in general, the imagery in the film is not always at the same level as the subject matter. So there's an image of women in red dresses spinning in circles like whirling dervishes.
Mm-hmm.
And an example of one of the threads that weaves through the trilogy as a whole. But in Dreamtime, we see that image of the women moving in circularly like whirling dervishes up in the trees. And they move in and out. It gives the sense of something coming in, almost emerging, fading, and then returning again. And I think it speaks to the way that the culture is changing. For me, it's a metaphor of the thing that's often spoken about in the film, which is the return of the feminine and its potential to cause shifts. So there are, I mean, people who see the film and respond to that image in various ways, but one response that really appealed to me was a woman who said that what it evoked for her was the stirring of the cauldron, the feeling of that there was a creating of a brew and bringing about something that is about to change. And the subtitle of the trilogy as a whole is Women Bringing Forth Change.
Mm. And, well, and I think one thing about the film, too, is, you know, this isn't just a talking head documentary. I mean, there's so much art in this as well. I mean, it's just a wonderful balance, I think, of ritual, of information, of people's personal stories, of art. And you know, some of the art and the images are provocative and they make you think. I mean, I like one of the scenes I can't forget is the woman standing in the tub with the water flowing down, and then you start to see the drops of blood. You know, I mean, what woman can't relate to that? You know, it was just so beautiful. I mean, how did you come up with, you know, all of this multi-layering? And I mean, where did the imagery for all of this come from for you? I mean, do you know?
It's a good question. Do I know? Well, I got stuck on the idea of red. That is one thing that I decided if I was going to make this film, and I did have the intention, you know, as much as I, of course, I wanted people to like the film, I knew that I was making a bold statement and that it took courage to do it. So I was kind of going back and forth between wanting to be bold and wanting to soften the imagery, which for me meant put it together in a poetic way so that it would have poetic resonances. There's a lot of the color red in the film, which is partly related to the blood imagery, but not exclusively the blood imagery. So other items that are red, including, you know, red roses and flowers and that kind of thing. I just had this feeling all along that it was, I could have a very rich palette. And, speaking in terms of color, and that's one of the things that I did work to achieve. And I think one of the things that was unconscious that I can't say that there's anything I did specifically to make this come about, but I wanted the material, one of my goals was to make the material have the ability to expand into the realm of the unconscious and allow for a feeling response.
Well,
so
you did. You succeeded.
Sorry?
I said, you definitely succeeded there.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think it needed to be literal and conventional in order for the points to be made. So,
well, let me ask you this, and I know when I was writing my book, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, I was out there given, slideshows one day, and somebody said, "Oh, Karen, it's so brilliant! That you did this." You did this book in a way that we could do a West Coast pilgrimage. If we live in California, we could drive from north to south or from south to north, and we can do a pilgrimage here in the United States without ever, leaving the country and spending all that money on airfare. And in the moment, I went, duh. I didn't actually plan it that way. That just turned out to be a really wonderful side benefit. Now, I know you had to edit this, this was your creation, but, I mean, I had to edit the book, and I didn't even realize what I did. Once you had it all together in the final product, was there anything about it that surprised you? I mean, did anything come through that you didn't consciously plan?
That's a good and interesting question.
Or the reaction of people, maybe people saw stuff in it that you didn't even see yourself.
Well, and in fact, the image of the spinning women is an example. I mean, that somebody would refer to it as stirring the cauldron. I had not thought of that particular image at all. I was grateful for the person who was willing to share that because it did add a dimension that I hadn't thought of. What you're asking me, I think, relates to something I said earlier in the interview. It's the way in which I continue to learn from the film, and I learn from it based on the responses that I get, what people see, and or what they reject, because very often it's not, an objection is not necessarily objective. It's
right.
Subjective.
Right.
So in some cases, I'm actually learning about the people who are watching the film based on what they say.
I know this was a labor of love. How long did it take you to make this? And you didn't have funding for it, so did you just totally make this out of your pocket? You didn't get a grant for it, I should say.
I did not get a grant. This was actually one of the first films I made that I didn't have any funding for. So it was in our pocket, and labor of love is about as appropriate a term as one can have. It, from the time that I first started shooting until the time that I was able to finish it, and I need to say that there were many, many things that happened in that time that when I wasn't actually working on the film, but it was a 13-year period.
Wow.
From start to finish.
What an interesting number.
Yeah.
We women, I don't know. I'm listening to you and hearing you, and I'm thinking, this whole project has been so much a metaphor for what women are. Women do every day of their lives give so much. We all have our labors of love. You know what I mean? We you know, we give so much, and sometimes we never know if there's going to be a return. But I think that's just the nature, you know, just the nature of women. And, you know, I want you to know that this is an incredible contribution to goddess spirituality, to women's spirituality. And, you know, you have done an awesome thing with this. So, you know, whether it's ever a huge monetary success or not, you know that you have made a wonderful, wonderful contribution.
I thank you so much for saying that. It is gracious and kind, and I am delighted to know that it has been speaking to so many.
Well, it's true. You know, you know, I don't have to extend myself. You know, I'm not just being nice. You know, this is, you know, you have really done women everywhere a service with this, and I'm sure even the people who, you know, maybe had, I don't know, unorthodox reactions or whatever you want to call it, you know, who maybe just didn't embrace it immediately, I can just imagine the seeds, you know, you must have planted, you know, for them, you know, just on so many levels. This is an important trilogy, and you need to hear that. You know, too often, you know, we do things and, you know, we don't get the necessary accolades, and I don't want that to happen in this case. I just want you to know you have done a really good thing here.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. It's been my pleasure to tell everybody I know about it. In fact, you know, when I teach Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, the first class is about women realizing that, you know, their bodies are sacred. And this was one of the references or resources that I told the class about. And, you know, and I recommend anybody who teaches the series, you know, if they can extend the class time, they should, you know, show this. You know, as part of women reclaiming their power, you know, women reclaiming their history, women reclaiming their bodies. This is important stuff. So,
is it possible to, or is it appropriate to offer the website address on this interview?
Oh, absolutely. I was just about to get to that because, you know, I've had people actually contact me when they saw the email blurbs about this, and they said, make sure you ask her where we can get it. Now, I know they can get it from your website, but why don't you go through that, you know, give out that information, Roberta, so listeners will know exactly how to learn about this and maybe purchase it.
Thank you. I recently updated the website, so I have added some new information, and one of the things I added was a PayPal button, so it's possible to order directly from the website.
And how
PayPal.
Much is it? How much is it?
The complete trilogy is $45 for people who are using it in-home, small groups, circles, that kind of thing. There's a different price for people who might want to use it in income-earning capacity.
Okay.
Like,
and now,
workshop.
Now, they probably can't get it from Amazon or any place like that. They have to get it directly from you.
That's right.
And what was the website again?
I haven't given it yet. It's
okay. I didn't think you did. I spaced out for a second there.
www.originaldigital.net. It's one word. Originaldigital.net. And then there's a /BMD, it stands for Blood Time, Moon Time, Dream Time.
Okay,
www.originaldigital.net/BMD.
Okay. And, of course, listeners, if you don't have pen and paper, you can always email me. You know how to reach me. I am more than glad to connect you with Roberta. Now, tell us a little bit about the awards it won.
Well, I don't know that there's too much more to tell other than, you know, you made the announcement.
Okay.
It was a finalist in the Moondance International Film Festival. I have to say, it was not scheduled in the festival. So it was a finalist. Obviously, it didn't win, but it also wasn't scheduled, which was both a huge disappointment to me and an indicator. And when I say that, I mean it's kind of said to me that in the eyes of some, it's not ready for mainstream consumption. I don't mean that I feel that way about it. I'm saying that that is obviously how the festival gatekeepers felt about it.
Hmm.
They were willing to, give it that accolade of finalist, but what reason would there be for them not to include it in the festival?
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to its provocative, it is a provocative film.
Well, and I have to keep reminding myself about that, because this is so normal for me now. This is like taking a breath, it is just such a natural thing to talk about. But I have to remember back when it wasn't, when I was that young woman or that young girl whose mother called it being sick. I have to constantly keep reminding myself that those people need to be reprogrammed, to really, to see this all in a totally different light, because what women have become, I think, now in patriarchy, their relationship with their body, that's the unnatural. That's the unnatural relationship. The natural relationship is what you're teaching in this trilogy. And we have to reclaim that natural relationship with our bodies and not be so keen on taking the next pharmaceutical drug that's going to, have us just do away with our sacred blood altogether.
It's so disturbing to me. I find that so disturbing. Everything that it represents.
Well, and who knows down the road what it's going to. Well, and who knows down the road what it's going to end up doing to women physically. What side effects may end up, what may end up happening. I mean, not to mention. I mean, that's totally separate from the psychological. The psychological idea of disconnecting from your natural processes, your life-giving process. I do want to mention before we go so much of it, if you're a listener out there and you want to learn more about this, I wholeheartedly recommend Roberta's trilogy. It's a wonderful visual way to absorb all of this. But also too, go on the internet and Google Red Tent Foundation or Red Web. These are some of the women out there who are teaching this out in communities because it is so very important. So Red Web, Red Tent. There may be other groups that aren't springing to mind at the moment, but it's out there. So you just look. There's all the support you need to do this for your daughter or your nieces or yourself. It's all out there, so you'll find it rather easily. So Roberta, before we say goodnight to you, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to make sure listeners know about the film or, about the process?
Yeah.
Or?
I just would like to say that I have become aware of the way in which this kind of information is a movement that specifically focuses on issues related to menstruation, and it's evidenced by not only my film. There's a film that's come out of Slovakia, which is called The Moon Inside of You, and it takes a very different approach, but some of the themes are directly related, as well as some of the imagery, which really surprised me. And there's also a film coming out, or it's in the making right now, called The Red Tent Movement. And so I feel very comforted to know that, it's just not out there waving in the wind all by itself, that there are these other things coming out from all over the world, really.
Right.
And
I think that speaks to the resurgence of the sacred feminine, too. And these images, maybe the images were similar because these images are almost probably archetypal, maybe that, you know, maybe there's something about that. I don't know. I haven't seen the film you're talking about, but that's what sprang to mind when you said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't have anything else I need to say.
Okay. Well, you know, you've been great. And, you know, I just want to thank you for doing this work. This is, you know, this is an important trilogy, and it really needs to sit on you know, in people's, you know, reference libraries. You know, this is an important one. So, listeners, go to Original Digital, www.originaldigital.net/BMD for Blood Time, Moon Time, Dream Time. And if you have any problems at all finding it, please just email me, because I don't want you to miss out on this. So, Roberta, thank you so much, you know, for being a guest tonight. And, again, just thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. I feel very honored to be your guest.
Well, it's my pleasure, believe me. I want everybody in the world to know about this. So thank you, Roberta, and I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, a hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness. Whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal. And, you know, because it's these new values, these benchmarks that I have every confidence will uplift women and just will save the world. And our guest tonight was the delightful Roberta Canto, a true contemporary bard, helping us to see through the blinders patriarchy has successfully put on women for way too long. Well, I'm going to take a very brief 1 minute music break, and I'm going to return for the What's the Buzz segment. And for that minute, let's see, I think I'm going to leave you how about I Am Goddess by Lisa Thiel? I'll be right back, so stay tuned.
Mother of life, I am the goddess, bearer of life. I am the goddess divine. I am the goddess divine. I see Venus is Tarkali, Minerva Shakti.
It's time for What's the Buzz, and if you'll indulge me for a minute, I think I'd like to share something with you. I've been thinking a lot about what's going on in the Gulf, just south of my hometown, New Orleans, you know, with this catastrophic oil spill. You know, maybe I'm more tuned in than maybe the average American because it's where I come from. You know, those are my roots. And, you know, as I always say, I hate it that I grew up in that Catholic bubble, and I'm so glad to have escaped, but there was so much about that region that is still very dear to me, and I've come to understand the things that are dear to me were really related to the sacred feminine, hiding there in plain sight, right down there in New Orleans, and the wetlands and the bayous and the ecosystems being destroyed as we speak. This area is really goddess to me. You know, I keep thinking how the catastrophes that this part of the country has had to endure is a reflection of all that's wrong out there in the world. It's almost as if this region is being sacrificed so that so many people can open their eyes and see. It's almost as if it's a microcosm of the macrocosm of all that's wrong on this planet. And have you noticed there's practically a news blackout on images showing us what's happening. I don't know, maybe I'm just not looking in the right places, but, you know, Facebook friends are saying the same thing. And why? You know, we just keep seeing the same footage over and over again. Are they afraid for us to see the devastation? Are they afraid of our rage? How many times have we seen the Republicans block Democratic attempts to take caps off the limits of liability these oil companies have to pay? They want you and I to pick up the tab for their sins. You know, they want us to pay for their rape and exploitation of Mother Earth and all her creatures. You know, they want big oil to get off easy. And, I mean, and these people are raking in astronomical amounts of money. It's not as if there's any danger of them going out of business for cleaning up their own mess. I mean, aren't you tired of the evildoers getting off so easy? You know, I can't even imagine how hard it must be to be a parent today and explain to children what good values and morality are when they can just turn on the news and see that bad people don't pay for doing bad things. If they're presidents or they're influential or if they have the money to buy media outlets or politicians, you know, funny thing is, so many of these evildoers, and you might think that sounds like hyperbole, but I don't, you know, these evildoers espouse family values. Well, what a crock. How many of them probably even say they're good Christians? They probably think they're good people. You know, they just feel they're entitled. Their needs and desires trump yours and mine. Well, with the oil spill comes the second rape of this environment in this part of the country in just a few short years. The oil companies and their insatiable desire for profits, who thumb their nose at spending just a bit more to ensure safety and prevent catastrophe and loss of life. No, they chose to roll the dice with Mother Earth and other people's lives and livelihoods. Why? So the haves can have even more. Unsatiable, never-ending, despicable greed and predator capitalism by whatever the name of the corporation or the paid-off politicians, they are destroying not just our mother, but people on this planet, from the shores of the Gulf Coast to faraway places some of us might not even be able to find on a map. You know, there was a great article that I posted on my Facebook page that showed what we could do for our country and average Americans if we just stopped funding the welfare of the military-industrial complex. You know, listeners, something is very, very wrong, and we must find our voice. We must be her voice. So let us go forth in the world, as I like to say, with Kuan Yin on one shoulder, who pours out of her compassion and nurturing to those in need, and Sekhmet on the other shoulder, who will devour the evildoers for the plague they let loose upon the land. I want to say, find your voice, find your roar. We can't be ignorant, we can't be complacent, we certainly cannot let Republicans get back into office in November. That would be the worst of two evils, especially if you're an average American struggling. They don't care about you. They're about denying people their rights and fighting regulation that helps keep us safe. I mean, right now, you know, they're trying to protect BP. So the bill for this catastrophe, you know, isn't humongous, and it should be humongous. I mean, how can you even put a price on the animals that are going to be lost, on the livelihoods that are going to be lost? I mean, it's 20 years since Exxon Valdez, and that ecosystem has not recovered. This is worse. This is worse. All in the name of their green god, and I'm not talking about the pagan green man, the green man of the forest. I'm talking about the dollar bill. They measure themselves by their bank book, by their balance sheet, not by their service and not by their humanity. I want to repeat a quote of one of my Facebook fans. They sent me, I think the quote is actually the quote of John Kenneth Galbraith, and I thank Duncan for sending it to me. And this is the quote. It says, goes like this, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Well, you know, Goddess is not about selfishness. She is about generosity, abundance, reciprocity, harmony, balance. You know, she provides all we need. Everything we need, you know, comes from her. It's all there. And we have to take care of her. We have to honor her. We have to be caretakers, not exploiters. So, you know, there's more of us than there are them. So find whatever means you have available to yourself and let your voice be heard. Well, with that commentary out of the way, I thought we'd go ahead and move on to our What's the Buzz topics. And at the top of the few items we're going to talk about tonight is West Virginia Baptist pastor Jeff Owens, who's inciting a Hunt a Homo campaign. And this comes from one of my favorite Examiner journalists, comes from Micah Stone. He's a Portland Humanist Examiner. And he tells us, and you can actually go to his site on the Examiner and watch this video, where this West Virginia Baptist pastor, Jeff Owens, is caught on tape thrilling a church full of Christians with the most obnoxious and vile homophobic hate speech. The rant is disgusting and exemplifies the very worst of Christianity in America. Jeff Owens currently leads the Shenandoah Bible Baptist Church, located in part of West Virginia that serves as a suburb of Washington, D.C. On the video, Pastor Owens states the following: "We need to stop burning flags and start burning fags. We need Hunt a Homo Week. We need to take them all out and shoot them with a scatter shotgun. That's Christian compassion for you, all right." Dan Savage reports in this sermon, Pastor Owens lovingly and compassionately calls on his flock to terrorize and murder gays and lesbians. For all of you moderate Christians offended by this sort of thing, by Owens' sermon, by people talking about it, by Micah Stone posting it, if you want to tell anyone that Owens doesn't speak for all Christians, well, go tell Owens. If you do want to, you know, make a comment to Owens, his phone number, he deserves to have you know, 304-263-3461. His fax, 304-263-0151. If you want to write him a letter, the Shenandoah Bible Baptist Church is located at 2251 Williamsport Pike. That's in Martinsburg, West Virginia, 25404. Well, Dan Savage is right. Moderate Christians need to stand up to this kind of hatred. Simply claiming Owens doesn't represent their kind of Christianity or claiming Owens isn't really a Christian, well, it fails to do the trick. Christians ought to contact Owens and tell him he's wrong. Christians ought to walk their talk. So if you do go to theexaminer.com or you Google this guy, just be prepared. The video contains some pretty graphic hate speech. Then our next topic is in Saudi Arabia, the women are resisting the virtue police. And Michael is my source for this, and I thank him. He always has his finger on the pulse of interesting things going on all around the world. He says Saudi Arabia is experiencing its own version of culture wars as women fed up with the notorious virtue police begin to fight back. Several incidents in the news highlight this growing and promising development in Saudi popular culture. The virtue police, also known as the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice, are Saudi religious thugs known locally as the Hai, H-A-I apostrophe A. The Saudi virtue police are despised by a large segment of the Saudi population. Saudi law does not permit women to be in public spaces without a male guardian, nor can women socialize with unrelated men. In addition, women are not allowed to drive, inherit, divorce, or gain custody of children. Officers of the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice are tasked with enforcing these laws. Another Micah mentions Boing Boing relays the following story concerning a woman being harassed by the Saudi virtue cops. According to the Saudi daily OKAZ, O-K-A-Z, the woman then allegedly laid into the religious policeman, punching him repeatedly and leaving him to be taken to the hospital with bruises across his body and face. I'm quoting a Saudi women's rights activist now. She says, to see resistance from a woman means a lot. People are fed up with these religious police, and now they have to pay the price for the humiliation they put people through for years and years. This is just the beginning, and there will be more resistance. Well, right on, sister, because this is just ridiculous. She says the media and the internet have given people a lot of power and the freedom to express their anger. The Haya, H-A-I-A, are like a militia, but now whenever they do something, it's all over the internet. This gives them a horrible reputation and gives people power to react. In another recent story, a woman shot at Saudi virtue police after being harassed while in the company of an unrelated male friend. The Los Angeles Times reports, in an unprecedented outburst toward Saudi Arabia's religious police, a married woman shot at several officers in a patrol car after she was caught in an illegal seclusion with another man in the province of Hayil on Tuesday. She shot at the officers to distract them and allow the man to escape instant detention. And yet another act of rebellion, and Saudi religious police arrested 10 girls for being emo, E-M-O, in a coffee shop in the eastern city of Daman after the shop owner reported them for wearing weird fashions and making a lot of noise. Recently, there have been several reports about individual cases of young Saudis arrested for adopting the emo style. In April, newspapers reported that a gathering of emos in Daman was foiled by the religious police. I think I'm going to have to Google emo. I am not getting what that means exactly. Well, anyway, good luck to the Saudi women resisting such foul religious oppression. Saudi Arabia's fundamentalist Wahhabi Islam is one of the most extreme and oppressive religious institutions in the world. It represents the worst sort of religious bigotry and ignorance. Imagine the most crazy Christian fundamentalists given the right to enforce their ignorant superstitions on the American population, and one begins to get an idea of the hell Saudi women must endure. Well, but in Italy, there's some progress. According to the BBC News, a married teacher is poised to become Italy's first woman priest when she's ordained later this month in an Anglican church close to the Vatican. Her name is Maria Longitano, a member of the breakaway Old Catholic Church, says she hopes her ordination will break down prejudice in the Roman Church. Excuse me. The event may energize the debate among Roman Catholics about the role of women, a BBC correspondent says. Pope Benedict is implacably opposed to women as priests. His predecessor, John Paul II, even banned official discussion of the issue. While Ms. Longitano stands to become Italy's first woman priest, women pastors are not unknown among the country's Protestants, notably the Waldensian Church. Although Ms. Longitano will not be a Roman Catholic priest, her ordination in the borrowed Anglican Church will be acutely uncomfortable for the Vatican. When seven Roman Catholic women were unofficially ordained in 2002, they were promptly excommunicated. Ms. Longitano, who says she has always wanted to be a priest and played with the communion wafers as a child, has accused the Vatican of preventing women from fulfilling their vocation. She said she hoped her ordination would galvanize debate among Roman Catholics about modernization. Some Catholics believe reform is necessary to reverse a decline in numbers and influence, and an Austrian bishop said this week that the church should eventually consider ordination of women. The old Catholics broke away from the Vatican in the 19th century, rejecting belief in the Immaculate Conception and the infallibility of the Pope. Their church, which leaves issues such as homosexual relationships and contraception up to the individual's conscience, has ordained women since 1996. So they're called the Old Catholics. That's the name of their group. And finally, our last topic for What's the Buzz Tonight, we're going to go back to the story of the Texas Social Studies and the Christian conservatives that want to rewrite history. Friday of last week, the Texas Board of Education, guided by Christian conservatives, adopted new social studies and history curriculum guidelines, rewriting American history and putting the education of children in Texas and beyond in serious jeopardy. The Texas State Board of Education, overrun with conservative Christian fundamentalists bent on rewriting American history, is trying to dictate how political events and figures will be taught to some 4.8 million primary and high school students in Texas and beyond for the next decade. The social conservatives want to force their distorted and twisted theocratic agenda upon the teaching of history, an agenda that exaggerates, distorts, and misrepresents Judeo-Christian influence on the founding fathers. The new standards attempt to minimize the separation between church and state and the enormous influence Enlightenment thinkers had on the creation of our nation. The new standards try to justify the Confederate cause in the Civil War while minimizing slavery and the great civil rights struggle of the 1960s. The Washington Post reports Friday's meeting of the Texas Board of Education, charged with revising the state's social studies curriculum, began with a Christian prayer on behalf of a, quote, a Christian land governed by Christian principles, unquote, a prayer made, quote, in the name of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, unquote. I believe that the entire Bill of Rights came into being because of the knowledge our forefathers had of the Bible and their belief in it. It's another quote. Somebody there on the board said. So, one who attempts to find American history in a book of fairy tales has no business deciding what school children should and should not read. The prayer itself is an affront to the inquiring mind, a denial of reason and rationality, a denial, quite frankly, of historical accuracy, and a supplication to ignorance and superstition. The attempt to remake this country into a Christian theocracy must be opposed. And I'm reading here from Micah Stone, Portland Humanist Examiner. He closes the article by saying, the American Taliban must be stopped. You know, I have to say, I don't disagree. You know, teaching children history in the wrong context is only going to lead to more closed minds and you know, that they won't be able to compete out in the world. It's really ridiculous that they would rather raise their children without the honest facts. Well, that concludes our What's the Buzz segment for tonight, and as long as you keep telling me you like this segment, as long as there are important things to talk about, I will try to be a voice for the ideals of the great she. We have to try our best to teach and share ideas that offset negative and toxic attitudes that breed ignorance, intolerance, hate, disharmony, injustice, imbalance. And as I'm fond of saying, we have to keep working to reach that 100th monkey, to shift that paradigm, to put that morphic field in motion so change comes, and it will. Let's use the steam of Bridget, the tenacity of Sekhmet, the social justice of Kali to set this in motion. So with that being said, the bees are released from my bonnet for yet another week. And before I get to announcements, let me share some of your comments from last week's show. This is from Sandy Spencer. She's the abbess with the Abbey of Avalon down here in Southern California. She tuned in last week to the interview I did with Vajra on women's natural spiritual authority, and the abbess of the Abbey says, Dear Karen, I just finished listening to you and Vajra. That was a very well-presented body of information. You both made it sound so natural and easy. I think that one of the most important things to come through to the listener is the sound of your voices that resonate with the complete belief in what is being said. The truth comes through the spoken word so very powerfully. Great job. Blessings to you both for all you continue to accomplish. And then one of my Facebook friends, who's also a listener, Yona, wrote quite a lot of comments here, but I'm just going to share a portion of it about Vajra's interview last week. Your voice carried the weight of natural authority and the lessons in learning how to stand up to aggressors, which you shared with listeners, needs to be heard by as many people as possible. I, too, believe that one must learn to have the courage to stand up and to demand change, and that this is best achieved by firm, nonviolent activism and by trying to awaken the conscious and the consciousness within those who have not yet lost their link to humanity. I'm so very grateful to you both for the way in which you continually create concise, powerful, poetic phrases which encapsulate so many issues in a hazel shell. Your depiction of so many patriarchal creation myths as unnatural and deliberate reversals of reality has tremendous impact and could well become the title of a book. Well, who knows, Yona? Maybe. So thank you both, Yona and Sandy, two of the comments that I chose to share tonight. I appreciate your feedback. Thank you so much for being loyal listeners and for communicating. Okay, now on to announcements. I want to let you know if these next few things affect you, you know, you can participate in them if you're in Southern California or you don't mind a little drive. The next in the series of Queen of Your Realm Convocations with Ava is going to be held Saturday, May 29th. The Queen's Convocation, the theme of this one on the 29th, is the Queen's Person, Her Beauty, Health, and Home. If there's a champagne dinner, you get wonderful handouts, a memorable ritual, a keepsake gold writing pen. And this is all held at the Goddess Temple in Orange County at 17905 Sky Park Circle, Suite A in Irvine, California. For more information about this or any of the events that the Goddess Temple has on an ongoing basis, their website is goddesstempleoforangecounty.com, goddesstempleoforangecounty.com. And if you're a regular listener, you know this convocation is a sort of a series. And this is just the next one in the series. This is convocation number 4, and I think altogether there might actually be 6. And it is $65 for this event, which includes a champagne dinner, and you can pay by credit card if you get in touch with the Goddess Temple. And I also want to remind you, down at the Goddess Temple, I am continuing that feminist curriculum put together by the Unitarian Universalists. I'm teaching it down there at the Goddess Temple twice a month. And the next class, which is going to be June 12th, it's called The Apostle Mary. It's about Mary Magdalene. And I'm going to be team teaching that class with Joan Norton. She has written the book, The Mary Magdalene Within, and she's also co-written a book with Margaret Starbird recently. These classes include PowerPoint presentations, ritual discussion. They're really pretty awesome, and they're Saturday afternoons from 1 to 4. Each class stands on its own. You can take a single class, but if you can take the whole series, all the better, because in the series we explore women's power, past, present, and future, in the context of our religious history, whether that be domination and subordination, our access to or lack of access to power, suppression of the female presence in Judaism and Christianity, and how patriarchal religious philosophy has affected relationships among women, men, families, and society's institutional power structures. Really, it's so important because understanding the historical roots of these phenomena help you empower yourself, help you improve your personal life and the lives of women and families everywhere. So again, this is at the Goddess Temple. You can either contact them at thegoddesstempleoforangecounty.com, or you can email me personally, and I will help you get signed up. And the third thing going on there I want to make sure you know about, Vajra, who we were just talking about, the comments came in so positively for our interview last week. She is traveling from Oregon to give presentations down at the Goddess Temple, and they're called I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. The first one is on Thursday, June 3rd. From 6:30 to 9:30, it's a sounding circle with Vajra. Then on Saturday, June 5th, from noon to 5 is a, you know, more in-depth workshop. Vajra says the most powerful tool of self-empowerment is your own voice, and you already own it. No need to purchase anything. Well, how can that be? Is it really free? No, not really. It requires your courage to stop hiding. Now more than ever, the world needs women voices, our real voices, physically, emotionally, spiritually. The world needs women's voice. So reveal your pathway for realignment and check out Vajra's workshops coming up there. Again, you can go to the Goddess Temple of Orange County website, or you can go directly to Vajra and register. And her website is greatgoddess.org, greatgoddess.org. Tell her you heard about this on the radio show and you want to sign up for the Voice Empowerment Hear Me Roar classes. All right. Now, going up north to Northern California, for you listeners, I want to first thank Pastor Stacy Bourne and the folks at her church in San Francisco for having me come up there just recently and give a presentation. And I want to be sure to mention to you their upcoming Faith and Feminism Conference in the fall. Please go to the website herchurch.org for all the details. And please, you don't want to miss, check out their Goddess Rosaries while you're there. And having traveled to San Francisco, that's a reminder of my motto, have Sistrum will travel. I'm available to talk to your group or church if you want to sponsor me to visit your city. So just get in touch with me and we can talk about it. And for Goddess Advocates Everywhere, my Turkey tour, Sacred Tour for Men and Women to Turkey in 2011. The itinerary is being planned and pricing is being done. So if you're interested in possibly coming with us, we're only going to take about 20 people, and we're aiming for October 2011. And pretty soon, all the details will be available. And I guess for listeners who are getting to know me a bit better, I know we have a lot of new people that have just started listening to the show. Do you know I have 2 years of archived radio shows on my personal website from when I was on another radio station called Passionate Internet Voices Radio? Yep, they're right there, and they're downloadable. They're free. I've had wonderful guests over the years that some of them come back and or repeat guests. In those archives, you can find people like Jean Houston, Margaret Starbird, Rhianne Eisler, Matthew Fox, Selena Fox, so many wonderful leaders and movers and shakers, all working diligently for Goddess ideals and to make the world a better place. So go there when you can. Listen at your convenience. I think you'll enjoy it. Friends have said it is a treasure, so I thank them for their wonderful feedback. I hope you'll also check out my articles at examiner.com. It's kind of like my blog, I guess. I'm one of only very few goddess advocates in the U.S. writing for the Examiner. You can find these articles by going to examiner.com and putting my name in the search box. The articles about me or by me will pop up. Or you can actually find a link on my homepage of my website that will take you directly there if that's easier. You'll find I quite often talk about the politics of spirituality, from healthcare to sexism, and the inhumanity of political platforms that put profits before people. I've talked about Obama's State of the Union message, you know, Republicans versus Democrats, all sorts of stuff like that. You know, Michael Moore, Bill Clinton, you know, former President Jimmy Carter coming out against the church oppressing women. There's lots of good stuff there, lots of good stuff. I invite you to visit the media page of my website and catch the radio interviews I've been invited to do, or go to my YouTube channel where I have some wonderful videos of the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving, Sekhmet's Mountain Sanctuary, and snippets, I think, of what's probably an important lecture I gave on Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. And just in case you didn't know, there are free downloadable meditations on my website, KarenTate.com. To find them, you just go to the button on the left-hand side of the page that says Goddess Store, and you just scroll down past my books and cards of sacred places that are available if you're interested, and get to the free downloadable meditations. And they're right there. They're free for your use. Some wonderful spring meditations. I had a lot of good feedback about these guided journeys, so I hope you go there and take a look, and I hope you enjoy them. And while you're there on the page, check out my books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, which has garnered prestigious endorsements, and Walking Ancient Path, which won a place as a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008. I have a special there for for listeners and internet folks. Both books are $25 plus shipping and handling, and that's actually cheaper than you can buy the books new on Amazon. Now, remember, here on Blog Talk, we can take your caller questions, so call in whenever you like, or if you'd rather not call in or you don't want to pay for the long-distance call because it is a 718 area code, you can just email me any questions in advance. So many of you already do, but for the new people out there, I'd like you to know that you also have that option. And please, if you're a fan of the show, please indicate that by selecting us as a favorite on Blog Talk Radio. Well, we're coming to the end of the show tonight, and we always try to close with an evening prayer or affirmation or something positive and uplifting. So now's that time when I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath with me. Bring an even deeper focus to the words of the prayer. But go ahead, take a deep breath. We've talked about a lot of heavy stuff tonight. Maybe you just need to let that all go. Grandmother Agnes Baker Pilgrim of the 13 Indigenous Grandmother tells us that we are water babies, that we shouldn't forget to thank water every day, that we should be thankful for the water we drink, the water we bathe in, because without our mother water, we would not survive. May we all find our voice and use it in whatever ways we can. Let us be her roar, and let us lend our voice with that of the foremothers as they tell us in this special prayer for Mother Earth, for the environment. Listen, listen, daughter, son, hear the cry of your ancestors. Why do you let the earth become polluted, poisoned, exhausted, poisoned, exhausted? Listen to the memories, daughter, son. Hear the voices of our foremothers. They want to remind you, the earth is our mother. If we take her life, we die with her. If we take her life, we die with her. Have you allowed yourself to become stained? Are you part of the game, playing for only yourself? Listen when the ancestors will ask you. Don't you remember where you came from? Don't you remember where you came from? You have sisters, you have brothers, from the jungles of South America to the stony shores of Greenland. Don't you remember where you came from? Well, to say goodbye for another week, I will leave you again with the words of Mansoura Emoto, author of The Secret Life of Water, because right now, water is being ravaged, water is being polluted in ways like we just have not seen in our lifetime. As Emoto says, water reflects the human soul. If you say thank you to water, it will be reflected in the form of beautiful crystals overflowing with gratitude in return. So as you bathe tonight, as you brush your teeth and do your dishes, let us remember to say thank you to water. And if you don't know about Mansoura Emoto, Google him. You find out that when you talk to water, you affect water positively and negatively. So, listeners, I'd like to leave you with one of the nice musical pieces that we have in our portfolio that so many authors, artists have generously allowed me to use here on the show. And because we haven't heard from her in a while, I think we're going to turn to Lane Redman tonight. And for the next 7 minutes, you can enjoy the final Delphic Oracle. That's the name of this piece. So good night, and thank you for tuning in. Hope you'll be back with us next Wednesday night at 6 p.m. So until that time, may the great She embrace you in her golden wings.
Above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess. Accept the gifts the gods have given you. Choose not the advice of others. Make your own nature your guide in life. The king. The well-crafted temple has fallen to pieces. Apollo dwells here no more. There is no more oracular laurel. No talking spring. And the voice of the water has been silenced. All is finished. Be heard again. above all things speak the truth. Know thyself. Know thyself.